Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Mike Lushin. I'm here with Ray Mencio again for another NFL Rough Draft podcast. Tonight, we don't have any prospect interview, but we're going to be talking about some of our favorite day three prospects. Before we get to that, though, Ray, we have a couple other things to cover, don't we?
Absolutely.
So, you know, first off, we really, you know, can't thank Arif Hassan enough. He came out with a draft article yesterday, and it was completely unexpected. I didn't even know it was coming out. And it talked about the most accurate draft forecasters from 2014 and 2015. Ray and I were fortunate enough to be first on the list, and our good friend Doug Martz, the draft board guru, was third. You know, we usually finish behind him in these rankings, so, you know, we knew he would be right up there near the top, if not at the top. But, again, we just really want to thank Arif for writing that article and, you know, giving us a little bit of press here because, you know, Ray, this is something that you and I have done together for a very long time, and, you know, we've certainly had, you know, a lot of notoriety. But, you know, that was a pretty big boost yesterday. You want to give your comments on that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first and foremost, his article makes sense. It's always fun to evaluate the draft immediately after. And one of the sillier things to do is the day after the draft, we all like to give grades about who did what and what happened. But when you take look back, you know, 3 or 4 years after the draft, that's when you could actually grade a draft. You could grade how, you know, anybody did, whether it was a draft analyst. And I know that this time of year, one of the things that people kind of get caught up with are mock drafts because they're fun. They're fun to read. They're fun to predict who your team's going to take, who your rival's going to take. But when push comes to shove, those things are just for fun. They don't really gauge your ability to predict the draft because we don't know what's going to happen in terms of trades and who's offering what and who's going to go after who. So, you know, the top 100 boards and the chart that we're selling tells a lot about where we find value in particular players. And, you know, sometimes it's nice. We do this for fun. You know, this is a fun thing that we do that we, you know, we could just continue to evolve. We followed the draft since we were, you know, 12 years old and before that, you know, but when we were like 12, 13 years old, we got into the draft. So this is kind of fun that, you know, I tell people all the time, there's the trends by particular general managers always stay true. I don't care who offensive coordinators are. I don't care who the defensive coordinator is. Typical with general managers and head coaches in that combo, the people they go after are typically that mold of person. So, you know, we pay attention to those types of things as well. And, you know, it's important, but it was a lot of fun and it was a good honor to see, you know, our names even in the article, much less at the top of the list.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, you really hit on something important, I think, that goes with our process there. And you talked about how a lot of trends stay the same. And I think player comparison and the types of players that work out also kind of remain the same, you know, and I think one of the advantages that you and I have is we've been doing this for a very long time. You know, like you mentioned, we got into this, we're 10 years old. And of course we didn't know anything close to what we know today, but you know, our player database goes back a solid 25 years. So, you know, we don't just remember Donnie Abraham. We remember Clifton Abraham, and you, over the years, you just kind of see certain types of players who work out and other certain types of players that don't work out, and, you know, that's really kind of made us pretty good, I guess, at projecting value and where NFL teams are and executives are going to value these guys as well, and that's actually a pretty good – oh, go ahead.
As you say, the only other thing that is important to note is, you know, we do spend a lot of time looking at this and whatnot, and there's a lot of quote unquote draft analysts out there. Some do it at the same level we do. They do it for fun. You know, our buddy Doug Martz does it for fun. This is something we do. There's some people that do it for a living. You know, this kind of should open a lot of people's eyes. The people that do it for a living tend to say, think that they have the only opinion. We're not right 100% of the time. We are absolutely not right 100% of the time. And one of the best things that you can do in any profession is listen to somebody else, something our government has a big problem doing. But when we listen to other people's opinions to get a different viewpoint. So this is the type of time that, you know, I want to, you know, get across to some of those other people. They do great, great work. But just, you know, when someone else has an opinion, take the opinion in, as long as they're making a valid argument and they're polite and correct, you know, like just listen to their argument and maybe you see a different side. You might not, but we're not going to know who's right or wrong about that for a few years down the line. So, you know, it's just, it's a time when, you know, we could learn a lot from each other and learn different perspectives about different players. And it's really important to do for everybody, just so you could get a full picture of who a prospect is.
Yeah. And you know, Ray, that's a really good transition right there into the last thing I want to talk about before we get to some of these day three prospects. And, you know, that's our draft board and some of the people who've been kind enough to support our site and purchase it. So, you know, Ray and I have our draft board for sale. It's $3. It contains almost 900 players. And basically it's just a board. It's got vertically the rounds 1 through 7, and then horizontally you've got the different positions, and you've really just got the players who we value in the first round in each position all the way through the seventh, and then we've ranked undrafted free agents at each position from 1 to 40. We combine specialists, kickers, punters, snappers. And, you know, we're still continuing to tweak that because we want it to be perfect. You know, our idea is that, you know, someone's going to print this thing out and keep it with them throughout all 3 days of the draft so they could see if their team's getting a good value if they don't necessarily know a lot of the, you know, day two or day three prospects. And then even Saturday night, you know, because as soon as that draft ends, these free agents start signing. And so that's why we wanted to list, you know, in order how good we think these undrafted free agents are. So, you know, if your team signs a couple of these guys, you could see where we value them. But, you know, the part that you mentioned was, before we got into this, Ray, was you said that you think it's really important for people to kind of listen to each other at this time of the year and not just automatically think, oh, okay, I know everything. Well, a lot of the people who have purchased our guide are people who are very knowledgeable because I've had conversations with them already, even though this thing just released like 36 hours ago. And, you know, I'm getting a lot of responses of people who are, they follow the draft, they have their own boards, and they just kind of wanted to see a different opinion. And, you know, for those of you who did that and reached out, I just want to say that I appreciate that. And I enjoy, you know, being able to respond to some of the emails that I've gotten and some of the Twitter responses that I've received and talk about the draft, you know, because it's great to see that you guys love it as much as we do. So, Ray, do you have any quick comments about the board before we get into the day three prospects?
Yeah, absolutely. If for anyone else who looks at the board and maybe there's a player not on their board, remember there's a lot more draftable players than what we have on there. So if you see that there's not a player that's there, do us a favor and let us know. Let us know who he is and why you think that maybe we should consider him throwing him on our board, because in all honesty, it might be a player that, you know, just through this process that, you know, we have not taken a deeper look into that we need to take a deeper look into, because, you know, I don't want to miss anything either. So if there's a guy that somebody out there says, you know what, you need to take a look at this guy, he played, you know, FCS Division II, Division III, you know, he put up big numbers, he, you know, he's a great athlete, whatever it might be, you know, just let us know so that we could take a deeper look, because, you know, we might not put him on our board, but we might give us the opportunity to look at somebody differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just one more quick thing with the people who have purchased our board. Again, it's $3. And, You know, the link to it is pinned to my Twitter account at NFL Rough Draft. And tomorrow we're going to have another podcast, and we're going to do sort of a mailbag from, you know, the people who have purchased it. I threw it out there earlier today. It said, any draft questions you have, you know, feel free to send them over. And, you know, if you want to hear what your team might do in the first round, we're happy to talk about that. We're happy to talk about, you know, what your team might do at the end of the draft or whatever you want to talk about. It doesn't matter if you want to talk about Sam Darnold or a guy who maybe went to your alma mater who probably won't get drafted. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want to do, send it over, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. But, Ray, I think, you know, we're about 10 minutes in here. This is probably the longest we've ever gone in one of these podcasts without talking about football. So let's get right into it. The focus of tonight is we're going to kind of shine some light on some more of these day three type prospects that don't get a lot of coverage. And, you know, I was talking earlier about some of the conversations that I had with some of the people who purchased our boards. And, you know, I was talking to someone yesterday, and, you know, he had the same comment that sort of goes along with a conversation you and I have had a lot, especially this year. You know, a lot of these shows on TV and in the media, they talk about the quarterbacks, you know, at the top of the draft. They talk about the first 30 players or so, but they don't really get into the rest of the guys. And, you know, we've mentioned many times that day three and, you know, day two, that's where your team's built. I mean, day one is so important because you could end up with a franchise player, especially if you're picking at the top of the draft. But teams really build themselves by drafting well on day two and day three. So I'm going to get right into it here with a guy who, you know, you and I are going to be thinking long and hard about putting him into our top 100. And this guy may sneak into day two before it's all said and done. But that's Darius Fountain, the wide receiver from Northern Iowa. And, Ray, you know that I've been talking about this guy for a long time. I sort of a few months ago, after his practice week at the Shrine game and then his performance during the game, I thought he was going to be the guy with the most production who goes on day three. He's going to be a punt returner right away. He's got height, weight, speed, and a ton of production at Northern Iowa. I think he's going to develop into a starting receiver on top of being a punt returner. And, you know, he went to his pro day, had a 42.5-inch vertical leap, had a bunch of other crazy workout numbers that would have placed him at or near the top of the wide receivers at the combine had he been invited. And it was kind of crazy that he wasn't invited. I don't really understand why he wasn't. But now, you know, he's had a lot of visits. And, Ray, I mean, what do you think? Is he even going to go on day three anymore, or is he starting to get into that day two territory?
It's a good question. You know, I mean, those receivers that are going to go in that range there's a lot of flaws in their game. And then when you start picking them apart, you know, you see different issues that maybe, you know, it's better to take a guy like Darius Fountain who, you know, still has a, you know, some room to grow, and he's already been pretty successful. You know, and he had a great year last year with 66 catches for 943 yards and 12 touchdowns. You know, it was definitely kind of a coming out party at a good time for him. So, you know, I think he's impressed teams so far. I mean, if he goes to the end of round three, I wouldn't be surprised. I still think today he probably goes to the top end of round four. But I think that the fact that he's also got return skills could definitely sneak him into there.
Right, so who do you have,
The guy that I kind of been pounding the table for, I think isn't getting enough credit, is Jeremy Reeves, a safety from South Alabama. Safety is an interesting position. There's definitely, you know, a learning curve that comes with it. But this guy was super productive for his entire career. He's another combine snub, but it's South Alabama. South Alabama is kind of, you know, one of those lower end, you know, FBS schools. You know, they play in the Sun Belt, and I know the Sun Belt's not all that, difficult of a conference in comparison. But, you know, he was a first-team all-conference as a junior and senior. He was a conference player of the year. He's got good speed. The one thing that he does well is he's hits, and he's tough. He's forced 9 fumbles in his career. He's a captain of the team. He's a good tackler. He's lined up in the slot. You know, he's not a height, weight, speed guy. You know, he's around 5'10", 5'11", just a shade over 200 pounds. You know, he runs in the 4.5s. He may be a nickelback. He may be a cornerback. He may be a safety. He may be do everything. I'm going to go on record saying that worst case scenario for him, he's on a practice squad. I think he makes a roster. He's going to be a valuable special teams player. He's going to be a backup, could play multiple roles, and we're going to see him have a career in the NFL because I just putting the tape on, everything that he does it well.
That's right, Ray. So I'm just going to throw a few more out here just in the interest of time. And, you know, I guess I'll stick with defensive backs for now. And, you know, I'm going to look at two guys who are going to go on day 3 because they're sort of pigeonholed into being sub-package cornerbacks. And that's Avante Maddox, the corner from Pitt, and Dietrich Nichols from South Florida. So, in my opinion, Avante Maddox is sort of a version of Dietrich Nichols. They have very similar height, weight, speed. They're both pretty small, around 5'9", 185. They both run in the low 4.4s. And, you know, Maddox has just had an unbelievable offseason. From the Shrine Game to the Senior Bowl, or not the Senior, from the Shrine Game to the Combine. And he's probably looking at round 4, round 5 at the latest. And then I think, you know, if you're a team that needs a guy who's just a nickelback and you miss on him, I think that's okay because you can go out and you can get Dietrich Nichols later. Again, these guys are pushed down because they're too short to play on the outside, but they're still going to be valuable members of their future NFL teams. And I really think both of those guys are going to make the cut in August and make 53-man rosters next year. Why don't we just keep this thing rolling, Ray?
Yeah, another guy that, you know, I really, really like in this draft is Chris Herndon. He's a tight end for Miami. What's hurt him during this process is that he hurt his MCL against Pitt in November and really hasn't really been able to have he performed his pro day, but there's no way he's near 100% right now. I think he's just trying to show teams that he's ready to go. He's a pretty good all-around player. You know, he gets the ball in his hands. He can make plays. You know, he can move in space. I think he could stretch the field a little bit. This year was his best year statistically, but again, David Njoku was ahead of him. So you can't really blame him, you know, for being stuck behind a guy who was a first round tight end. Great. His biggest knock right now is he's probably not a great inline blocker. But again, there's not a lot of college tight ends that are great inline blockers immediately when they come out. I think that the few flaws that he has are, you know, very teachable. And I think that he's actually going to end up being a pretty good value pick. I think he ends up going in round 4. If he was healthy, I think we'd be talking about him maybe even at the end of round 2. And if he was able to show how good he was, but I think that you're going to see him on round 4. Again, another guy, I wouldn't be shocked if he went in round 2 because I think he's more dynamic than some of these other tight end prospects.
You know, I'm with you on that. I think the presence of Ian Thomas, the tight end from Indiana, probably hurts him a little bit too, in addition to his MCL, which, you know, I don't think is as much of a problem as some people originally thought it was going to be. But Ian Thomas is sort of that same type player, and I think he's going to go higher than Herndon. So I think you're right. I think that pushes Herndon down to that 4th-round range. I'm going to go with Darrell Williams. You know I love this guy. So running back, LSU. If you haven't heard of him, it's probably because he was buried behind Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis the past couple years. So he still averaged over 5.5 yards a carry last year. It was over 4 every year when he was there. He's good in the passing game. Okay, he was 2nd on the team in receiving, and I know that's not always saying much for LSU. They don't throw the ball a ton. But, you know, this isn't going to be a guy who is going to be a Pro Bowler, but you're going to be able to use him as part of a committee. The guy he kind of reminds me of, this isn't a perfect comparison, but he reminds me a little bit of Michael Bush, the former Louisville running back who played for the Raiders and the Bears. You know, Michael Bush was 10 pounds heavier than Williams, but again, they're both kind of these big backs. They don't have breakaway speed, but they can catch the ball and be valuable in the passing game in addition to running between the tackles. So I really like Darrell Williams. I would take him in the fifth round. There's a chance that he could fall to the sixth or seventh round because of the outstanding running back depth in this class. Who do you have, Ray?
I'm gonna give this my best shot, but it's a linebacker from Western Kentucky, Joel Iyebunwe. It's a lot of vowels in his last name. But you know, here's a guy. He was first team as a junior, and he decided to come out early. I never like to say a guy did or didn't come out too early because we don't know what his personal circumstances are. So him and his family sat down, made the decision that it was the best for him to come out. And I'm just going to kind of trust that they made the right decision. From a football standpoint, I probably would have liked to have seen him on the field for another year. But again, you know, hasn't really been able to showcase his full ability. He's got really good speed. He's athletic. But he's not the biggest guy in the world. You know, I think that, you know, some people are going to, you know, he's going to be a will probably. He could play inside in the 3-4, and a lot of 3-4 teams have been bringing him in for visits. But there's one thing that I'm going to tell you is that here's another guy in another case that he's going to make a team because he's a great special teams player. And when we're talking about special teams players, I'd put him in the top 10 in this draft easily of guys who are going to be good special teams players. So he's worth a draft pick right there that you're going to be able to dress him on game days. He's been climbing up draft boards from what I think that people, again, same situation we talked about with Frank Ginda. When a guy comes out early that you maybe weren't expecting, you feel like you're playing catch up a little bit. So I think teams are just starting to dissect him a little bit more. He's definitely someone that we've dissected a little bit later. I like the guy. I think he's going to be has potential to be a starting linebacker in this league because he can cover running backs and tight ends. He's going to have a little bit of trouble with the bigger tight ends like Gronk, but nobody can cover Gronk, so that's almost a moot point. But you know, here's a guy I really think he's going to make a team, and he's going to make an impact in his rookie season.
Yeah, and you know, for those of you who don't realize, Ray's referring to when he's talking about Frank Ginda, he's referring to our interview that we did with him last week. He's another one of our favorite late round picks. And again, this plays into our draft board as well. Once you get into that, you know, fifth, especially sixth and seventh round range, that's where you start to really focus in on whether or not these guys can be good special teams players. That's really important because, you know, and at that point in the draft, you want to draft a guy who's going to make your team. At the same time, you're not necessarily counting on him to start as a rookie. So I'm going to move on to Matt Gonnell. Ray, you know that we couldn't get through this without me mentioning Matt Gonnell from Wesley University.
Matt Gonnell was your man crush right now.
So Gono was a tackle there. He's going to have to play guard in the NFL because he's only 6'5". Now, he got invited to the NFL PA Bowl, and he was mauling people there. All right, so I feel strongly that he's going to get drafted. Now, it may be the seventh round, but I think this is a guy that you bring in, and early in his career, you let him be your backup swing guard. Okay, so he can play either of the two guard positions, be a game day active as a rookie, and then I really think that he's got the potential to be a starter as he moves through his rookie contract.
I mean, those late round guards, how many we see them often develop into, you know, being good players. And again, you know, no one might not know a lot about Wesley University football, but, you know, they're a D3 school, but they've got They had a great year last year. They went 10-2. I'm sure, you know, there's a big reason why. They kind of breezed through their conference and they went 9-0. So, you know, he's had success there, and it's Wesley College, by the way, not Wesley University. I'm sorry, I should miscorrect myself. I'm gonna two guys I'm gonna give you right now, two receivers. They could be late round guys. They could be undrafted free agents. But I'm actually, you know, I really like both of them, and they're very similar to me. And that's Jalen Acklin from Western Illinois and T.O. Redding from Bowling Green. Now, situationally, they're a little bit different. They're different prospects. Acklin really came on and exploded this year. He only had 364 yards receiving in his freshman, sophomore, and junior years, but had 1,369 yards and 10 touchdowns last year. He wasn't invited to the combine. His pro day, his numbers are through the roof. There's three cone short shuttle, he's 40. He's got really good hands. He's got a ton of explosiveness. And you know, one thing that we're going to delve into a little bit tomorrow, because there was a question about it, was spark ratings. And both these guys were, you know, if you don't know what spark is, again, we'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow. But it basically tells you can measure how athletic somebody is and what their explosive is. And T.O. Redding and Jalen Acklin are way up there at 80. They're both in the mid 86 percentile in the NFL. Redding was a second team All MAC this year. Again, they're both about six, you know, just around 6'1", around 200 pounds. They're similar prospects. They both have good hands. They're both explosive players. And again, these are the types of guys that I feel like with an NFL coaching that they could go from being a solid receiving prospect to very good receiving prospects. And again, they're going to have to fight to make teams. You know, this receiving class has some interesting players, but these two guys, they fit into one particular category for me. And if you're looking for that explosive game breaking type receiver, these are two guys you want to take a long, hard look at in day three. And if they don't get drafted, they will be scooped up very quickly and given probably very sizable signing bonuses for undrafted free agents.
All right. Thanks, Ray. Right. So I'm going to finish this thing off with two more pass catchers. Just real quick here. Marquez Valdez-Scantling from South Florida. He reminds me of Tyrell Williams, the receiver from the Chargers. You know, I think he's got a little bit of a limited route tree, but he's athletic, and I think he's going to be a big play guy, a complimentary piece, maybe a third receiver in the NFL. And Durham Smythe, the tight end from Notre Dame. So Durham Smythe, first and foremost, he can block. Okay, if you're a tight end and you can block in today's NFL, there's a place for you on an NFL roster. Now, he didn't catch the ball that much when he was at Notre Dame. Nobody caught the ball that much last year at Notre Dame. The quarterback play wasn't very good. It hasn't been for a couple of years, even you know with Kaiser there a couple of years ago. But when Smythe got to the Senior Bowl, he showed that he can run routes pretty decently and catch the ball as well. So I think worst case, Durham Smythe makes the team as a backup or a third-string tight end who's a blocking specialist. Best case, I think he could develop into sort of a low-end to mid-range starter. I don't see much of a difference between him and Dalton Schultz. So, Ray, we have to wrap this thing up for tonight, but we're going to be back tomorrow. We're going to have 30 minutes of just mailbag questions from the people who have supported us and bought our draft board, which, again, is available if you go to my Twitter handle, NFL Rough Draft. You'll see it pinned to the top of my profile there. And I've already gotten a ton of great questions that you know, I'm looking forward to talking with you about tomorrow night. And just a reminder for everybody who's kind of found us in the last couple of days because of the article written about us from 2014 and 2015, those draft classes at least, the articles from yesterday. Thank you for all the follows on Twitter. @TheRayMencio, M-E-N-C-I-O. That's my partner in crime over here, and, you know, NFL Rough Draft wouldn't exist without him. So make sure you give him a follow as well. Ray, great job tonight, and we'll catch you tomorrow.
Looking forward to tomorrow.